Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Marine Staff Sergeant Jeremiah Workman signed up for the U.S. military as a teenager straight out of high school, was shipped to Iraq. 2 days before Christmas, 2004, he was plunged into hyper-intense combat in the Iraqi city of Fallujah. It was an awful day. He came out decorated with the Navy Cross for heroism and with a case of post-traumatic stress disorder that he still battles. He's written movingly about it. This hour, On Point Sergeant Jeremiah Workman joins us with his story and the reality of PTSD. You can join the conversation. Have you been there, fought, and fought later with the aftermath of war in yourself or a loved one? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Sergeant Jeremiah Workman will join us in a moment. We're just having a little difficulty with his line to Los Angeles, but we are joined right now, and very glad to be so, by Dr. Heidi Kraft from San Diego. She is a former clinical psychologist in the Navy, directed a combat stress unit in Iraq, and wrote the book Rule Number 2, Lessons I Learned in a Combat Hospital. She continues to treat combat trauma. Dr. Kraft, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
We're looking forward to hearing from Jeremiah Workman in just a moment. I think you know something of his story, but you know a lot of stories. The numbers that he conveys in his work just sort of astonished me. We've heard so much about PTSD, but he's talking about hundreds of thousands of veterans from Afghanistan and Iraq, hundreds of thousands having sought treatment, and more hundreds of thousands likely to do so in the years ahead. Does that stack up with your sense of the scale of this as an issue, as a problem?
Well, certainly we know that the prevalence rates, in other words, the rates of the diagnosis being made, are going up dramatically in both the DOD and VA systems as we speak, which, Heidi Kraft's opinion, I think that's a very good thing. And the reason is that what we've struck, what has been against our military for all these years, has been this stigma that has sort of stuck out for them, something that has been longstanding, a cultural phenomenon against our warriors, that when you talk to Vietnam and Korea, even World War II vets, they'll talk of this, of not being, feeling that they're allowed to admit anything less than emotional perfection. So struggling with some of these injuries, we like to call them injuries rather than illnesses, struggling with these injuries that you can't see has been really difficult for many of our warriors to admit. The military has made a really conscious effort in recent years to make it okay to have these injuries, to seek needed treatment, and to get better from those injuries.
But he's so written that the VA initially planned for just 8,000 cases out of Afghanistan and Iraq. And he says, in reality, some 300,000 of us have sought treatment. I guess that means the military itself has been making adjustments as it goes here.
I think so. I think what's happened is that as our younger warriors, such as Sergeant Workman and those in his peer group, as they have come out of these combat experiences, they have felt, unlike any generation before them, that it is, in fact, okay to get this kind of help, whether they're still on active duty or once they enter the VA system. I think the increased rates are a very good sign. I don't think that it, again, Heidi Kraft's opinion, I don't think that this combat experience is different than those of the past. I just think that we're making it okay for our men and women to admit that they've been injured in a way that people can't see and admit that it might be needed to actually seek treatment for that injury.
Jeremiah Workman, Sergeant Workman, writes about his struggle to concede and bring that forward and the struggle he sees in many others. We'll talk with him about that as soon as we get him on here. He may be too modest to say, but for his combat performance, this was December 23rd, 2004, in the thick of the Fallujah mess, he was awarded the Navy Cross. You, as somebody who's been in the field, you know what a high distinction that is. Lots of soldiers, Marines, have found themselves in intense combat. But on that day, you know, he may have killed 20-plus enemy trying to rescue some of his own comrades there. The Navy Cross is not pinned on somebody for just a bad day in the field.
No, the Navy Cross is the nation's second highest honor for valor and bravery in the face of unspeakable conditions.
Jeremiah Workman, Staff Sergeant Jeremiah Workman, joins us now from Los Angeles. He's author of the new book, Shadow of the Sword, A Marine's Journey of War, Heroism, and Redemption. Sergeant Workman, thank you very much for being there.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I want to compliment you first. This is a pretty terrific book. It's harrowing. It's difficult to read sometimes, but you've eloquently brought across something I'm sure not a lot of people understand. Heidi Kraft is with us. She's a director of combat stress unit in Iraq. We just looked at some of the numbers that you lay out about the preparation for 8,000 cases of PTSD and the hundreds of thousands that have emerged instead out of Iraq and Afghanistan. Heidi Kraft is saying she thinks the military has a more open attitude these days. But Jeremiah Workman, if I may, I was struck by something you said in an interview not long ago, that you'd been at Disneyland with your own family just this last summer. And your sister-in-law, she's young, a senior in high school, but so were you young when you headed off to the military, said to you, there's no such thing as PTSD. This is in your own family. This view is still out there, Sergeant.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely out there, and it's pretty widespread. We were at Disney World, and we got to talking. And, you know, she's a sophomore in high school, so... I hate to use the word uneducated about PTSD, but, I mean, that's what it is. And, you know, I just had to tell her. I'm like, look, you've never experienced anything traumatic in your life, so, you know, how can you stand here and say that this doesn't exist? I'm here to tell you. I'm living proof that it exists, and there's thousands of other guys and gals out there that will tell you that this is alive and well.
We'll have a lot of listeners today listening closely to understand the sort of intimate process and terrible and ultimately redeeming that you've been through. But you were in high school yourself when you first headed off to the military. You're still only, 26 or something like that? When you think of yourself before and after your combat experience, how did the profile change, Sergeant Workman? Your sort of before and after personality of Jeremiah Workman.
Well, you know, in high school, I played four sports a year. I had everything that I could have wanted, and I shipped off to Fallujah, and I came back, and I'll be honest, I was one of the ones that I thought, how could this ever happen to me? I mean, PTSD is for weak people, and I even believe that myself. Mm. And, I came back, and I was in denial for the first year. And finally, I went and got some help for it, and I think I'm a perfect example that, you know, PTSD can affect anybody. It doesn't matter where you came from, your upbringing, anything like that. It can affect anybody, and that's just the facts of it.
But you were, and maybe still are, not alone in your resistance to the idea. Dr. Kraft is saying, you know, we've got maybe hundreds of thousands of people seeking treatment now because the military is more open to acknowledging this today. But you, before your experience, and maybe even others now that you talk with, there certainly was, in your case, a block to acknowledging this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when it comes to PTSD, there's been this wall up, you know, since the beginning of time. As Marines, soldiers, sailors, airmen, it's not really part of our makeup to be mentally weak, I guess. And definitely everybody I talk to, I mean, very few people will come out and say, you know what, I think I might need to go get some help for this, because, you know, especially as Marines, you know, there's that macho attitude. You're expected to go kill bad guys and step over the dead guy and continue on with the mission. I mean, that's just you know, how it is in the Marine Corps. It's very masculine, macho. And, we've got to work on that. It is getting a lot better, I can tell you that. I mean, compared to when I came home and now, it's so much better. But we definitely got a long way to go still.
Is there a way to make war without risking PTSD, without a substantial portion of warriors coming home with post-traumatic stress disorder, in your view, Sergeant Workman?
No, you know, I think... anytime you send young men and women to war, you're going to have cases of PTSD when people come back. War, no matter how hard you train, how much you train for war, until you actually experience it and you stare the devil in the eye, you know, I don't think there's any way we're going to get rid of it ever. I mean,
Dr. Kraft, Heidi Kraft in San Diego, do you see it the same way? This is part and parcel of war?
Absolutely. I think combat's always been one of the most traumatic things we can talk about. Always has been, always will be. Absolutely.
Jeremiah Workman joins us today. He's with us from Los Angeles. His new book is Shadow of the Sword, A Marine's Journey of War, Heroism, and Redemption. You can read an excerpt from the book at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today with decorated Marine Corps Iraq combat veteran Sergeant Jeremiah Workman about his battle with post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. He's written a book, Shadow of the Sword, A Marine's Journey of War, Heroism, and Redemption. It is some kind of read, and he'll tell us something of the story today. Dr. Heidi Kraft also joins us from San Diego, former clinical psychologist in the Navy, directed a combat stress unit in Iraq. Staff Sergeant Workman, you write very movingly about how the trauma of war gets into a person's mind, got into your mind, and plagued you when you came back. I think most people, it's hard for them to really understand the depth of trauma that's out there that produces that. I know it's hard for you, but I wish you'd give us a sense of that day, December 23rd, 2004, in Fallujah, and a sense of what went on that day, which got so deep into under your skin, into your psyche, Sergeant.
Yeah, I mean, it was December 23rd, 2004. It was the day that we opened the city back up to the Fallujahan citizens to come back to their homes, and it was just another, you know, we were going through one last time to get weapons and ammo out of the city before we let these people come back home. And my section went out, and we stumbled into a hornet's nest. Five Marines from my section were trapped on the second story of a well-fortified house. And
a house that was full of very well-armed opponents.
Very well-armed. And, you know, there was upwards of 30, I think. You know, I've heard different numbers, but 33 to, you know, I think is pretty, you know, close to mm-hmm. accurate. And, you know, we got trapped in that house. I mean, there was, you know, we had to get our Marines out of there. We lost three Marines that day. Everybody mm-hmm. was wounded. And
including you.
Including me. I'm one of the lucky ones. I received, you know, just minor shrapnel wounds. I mean, there was guys in there that were hit with AK-47 rounds through the shoulder. I mean, there were some pretty serious injuries. But, you know, looking back on that day, I mean, I think what really, you know, caused the trauma for me was, mm-hmm. it wasn't, I had seen 1,000 dead insurgents laying around that city, and that didn't bother me whatsoever. But the second you lose one of your own, you know, a United States Marine, it definitely changes, and it affects you. And, you know, when I came home, I just, people always ask me, you know, well, did it affect you from that day on? And the answer is no, because I was still in Iraq until mm-hmm. April of 2005.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you lose Marines in combat doesn't mean that you get to stop and, you know, roll over. I mean,
right.
You're still a mission. You got to continue and you got to push on. So I never really had time to sit and think about what had happened. So that's when, you know, when I came home, it hit me like a ton of bricks.
I read somewhere you saying it was almost like, and this takes us back to the old days of vinyl records, but like a scratched record, that what happened in your mind, a kind of a gouge in it from that day that kept repeating, that nightmare scenario. Well, you're downstairs, your buddies are upstairs, you need to get up those stairs to save them, but every time you and your colleagues try, it's a hail of gunfire. I mean, talk about a nightmare, and it literally came back to you as a nightmare. I think I've read you killed something like 20 enemy on that day, maybe more. But still, it was your buddies up there. They needed you, and you couldn't get up the stairs. It almost sounds like the kind of thing you'd have in a nightmare.
Yeah, I mean, it. When I came home, I had the same nightmare every night. I mean, it never changed, and no matter what I did, I could not get it out of my mind. I mean, as soon as I would go to sleep, it would intrude into my dreams, and I mean, it was terrible. It was the same thing. I've stuck on a staircase. I've got insurgents chasing me, throwing grenades at me. And so I did what, you know, a lot of other guys and gals do when they're dealing with PTSD. I started self-medicating with alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And to try to knock myself out at night so I could go into such a deep sleep that I wouldn't have the dreams. And, you know, when you start self-medicating, the wheels really start, you know, spinning off the bus. And,
And then there were other drugs as well to help you sleep and cope. And the wheels really did come off the bus when you were down Paris Island with new Marines, helping bring them into the service, into the culture. Describe for us what happened there when you kind of lost it.
Yeah, when I got the drone instructor school at Paris Island, I had to stop drinking alcohol in order to, you know, physically make the school. And when I stopped drinking, that's when everything kind of fell down on top of me. You know, my medication, so to speak, was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I made it through drone instructor school, started working my first platoon, and, you know, I was the junior drill instructor whose only job is to harass and torment and, you know, be the disciplinarian for new recruits.
The phrase is kill hat? Was that what they called your role?
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of different names for it. Kill hat, third hat, you know, there's several different names.
They literally told you they wanted you to press these new recruits until some of them attempted suicide.
Yeah, and I think I've got to let everybody know that is definitely not what the Marine Corps wants. That was one individual down on Paris Island, you know, that told me that. So I just want to clear that up. I don't want anybody to think that's the aim of the Marine Corps, because it's definitely not.
Fair enough, but it was real in your case. That's the guidance you were given here.
Yes, those were my marching orders, and that's what I was told to do. But I'll tell you, it just hit me like a ton of bricks down there, because here I had just come from a squad leader in Fallujah where I did everything in my power to keep people alive, and now I'm supposed to terrorize these kids, basically. And I just had a heck of a time, you know, doing that.
Melted down in front of them at one point and had to come to terms with exactly where you were.
Yeah, I mean, we were marching the platoon to the chow hall in the morning, and, you know, I was literally, I was in a different place. It's hard to explain, but, you know, I had 90 recruits marching beside me, and I didn't see, I just was not there mentally. And, you know, it was an incident inside the chow hall where they, you know, my colleague that was in charge of me told me just to go home. You know, he couldn't have me around the recruits anymore. And that was the beginning, of the end of my drill instructor days. And but luckily for me, it also led to me getting help. So,
Dr. Kraft in San Diego, the outlines of this story, I mean, the particulars are always particular. But in outline, do you hear, I don't know if there's such a thing as a standard expression of PTSD, but something familiar to you?
Oh, very familiar, obviously. I, having been in Iraq with the Marines and taking care of primarily Marines since then, there is this theme that seems to come through regardless of the story, and that is what the sergeant mentioned about the guilt and grief over the loss of a comrade. There is something that is so consistent across every story. Leaders feel guilty. Friends feel this unfathomable loss. And those situations play out again and again, especially when they're faced in stressful situations where they may be triggered once they come home.
I want to open this conversation up to our listeners. Sergeant Jeremiah Workman is with us from Los Angeles. His new book, and it's powerful, is Shadow of the Sword, A Marine's Journey of War, Heroism, and Redemption. He was awarded the Navy Cross. That is way up there for valor on December 23rd, 2004. He still pays for that in a way with a tough case of PTSD, but he's confronting it and encouraging others to do the same. Anna from Fort Campbell, Kentucky. Anna, you're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. I just wanted to thank Sergeant Workman for his service. I know many soldiers who have come back and experienced the same things.
It's okay.
My husband included.
Mm-hmm. Your husband included, you say. Yep.
Yes. My husband is in the Army. He actually signed out today.
Wow.
He was an Iraq veteran, infantryman, so he did see a lot. And my biggest complaint was that the Army did not do a reintegration process that I felt was sufficient enough. They had to work for the first 7 days, but if they did admit to having problems, nightmares, other issues, they could not go on their 30-day leave. So all these guys would say no because they want to go home and see their family.
Of course.
So I do think that all branches of the military, they have improved, but they need more improvement on reintegrating these guys into civilian life. I mean, they're coming from a country where they have free rein, and they come back to a society where it's not that way.
And how did your husband's PTSD show itself to him, to you?
There were several times, he was serving in Iraq in 506, and he would come home and we would be driving down the road, and he would have to swerve off the side of the road, get the plastic bags went across, and he had images of IEDs and debilitating nightmares. And they do self-medicate with alcohol. They haven't gotten to drink for a year. So that's what they want to do, and that's the only way, one, my husband's back would feel any relief, and also he could escape from the nightmares he had of Iraq.
Sergeant Workman, what do you say to Anna? Your wife, Jessica, had to carry the same burden with your return. You must recognize her experience and her emotion both.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my wife went through the exact same thing, like you said. And you know, I want to say thank you for your support and everything. And you know, I think that's one of the main reasons, you know, that I'm still around here today is because, you know, I had a good support network, and I think that's very important. But I will agree with you, Anna, that you know, back in, you know, I came home in 05. It was exactly what you said it was. I mean, they literally, the medical officer for the battalion sat there at the armory as we were turning weapons, and he asked each person if you're having any problems. You didn't want to be the guy to say yes and hold up the line at the armory because that was the only thing keeping us from seeing our families. So everybody just, yeah, I'm good, and we turned our weapons in, and that was about it. But I can tell you that it has changed drastically since then. And I think they're doing a lot more classes overseas before they redeploy back home. And I think they are having, you know, a more of a stand-down time back here in the States before they cut them loose, at least in the Marine Corps. I hope that the Army is following suit.
Anna, we wish you and your husband the very best of luck and thank him for his service and hope the path gets smoother. Let's get another from Orlando, Florida. John, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi. Thanks for the call. Thank you, Staff Sergeant, for your dedication and sacrifices you've made. I've had some similar experiences. One of my issues, one of the problems that we have, I'm, you know, attached to a Marine Special Operations Command, and a lot of the problems that are faced with guys in a unit of our size is. A lot of the missions we go on, a lot of the stuff we do is things that we're not allowed to talk about. We're not allowed to give details of situations I mean, some of this can be called treason if we do, because of the clearances we have and the things that we go on. And
mm-hmm.
and the nature of, you know, a reconnaissance Marine or, you know, a reconnaissance Marine sniper is their goal. A lot of the goals from the team is when they get out, they want to attain, you know, some federal positions, federal jobs,
right.
stay in the federal system. If they decide not to stay in the Marine Corps and it's an ongoing fear of, well, am I going to be, are they going to question my psyche if I go and try and do get help?
Or so you've got to bottle it up. All the incentives are lined up for you to keep it bottled up, John.
Yeah, absolutely. And I tell you, it has gotten me, you know, the self-medicating with alcohol and you know, I'm hearing, you know, Staff Sergeant talk about this, and I'm like in his, I feel like I'm in his boots, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he's gotten a lot better faster than I have, but, you know, it's scary for me. I don't know what to do, but I don't know where to go. I don't want to hurt myself by not being able to get a job, but at the same time, you know, the self-destructive nature can't be healthy either.
John, hold on if you would, John. Dr. Kraft, give some advice to this Marine. He's in special ops, reconnaissance. He's afraid if he says anything, you hear all the ramifications. But he's wrestling with it. What does he do?
Absolutely.
What does he do?
I've had the great privilege to take care of a couple of recon Marines, John. First of all, within Special Operations Command, there should be psychologists with your same level of clearance that are read into almost everything you've done. Is that not a true statement?
Right. That there is, and that's
okay.
Accurate.
Okay, good. So this is at least what I knew from my time with working with some of the SEALs. So if those folks are trusted to you, obviously they're your first source of being able to work through some of this where you can tell the story, and I realize that's a huge challenge for you. Secondly, though, most important, it is so important to actually seek the help. And I understand the concern about the federal jobs. I hear this a lot from folks that are worried about being cops, marshals, FBI,
mm-hmm.
you name it. The good news is many of these federal agencies are starting to see this, that in fact, some of these sequelae from the war, like PTSD, it's actually a braver thing to do and a more insightful thing to do to get the treatment and get better than to ignore it and have a problem later. So that stigma is starting to change as well. Can't guarantee that every agency feels that way, but it is the aircraft carrier is turning around. The other option is OneSource, John. That's the military OneSource, which is anonymous and provides treatment for 6 to 12 sessions. It could be a good start, at least.
John, we wish you luck with that. We see it's not easy, but we hope you find a way, and we thank you for calling today. Dr. Heidi Kraft, please stand by in San Diego. Jeremiah Workman is with us. He's written Shadow of the Sword about his experience with PTSD. Also worked with country singer Derek Scholl to write the song When They Come Back. We'll hear a little of it. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. When they come back, we thank God they're home. Yeah, they're older, wiser, filled with more peace than they've ever known. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking today with decorated Marine Corps Iraq combat veteran Sergeant, Staff Sergeant Jeremiah Workman, about his battle with post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. He's written a book, Shadow of the Sword, A Marine's Journey of War, Heroism, and Redemption, and it is quite a story. Sergeant Workman joins us today from Los Angeles, California. We're also joined by Dr. Heidi Kraft. She directed a combat stress unit in Iraq, wrote the book Rule Number 2, Lessons I Learned in a Combat Hospital, continues to treat combat trauma. The whole nation got a little taste of the boots and the rifle and the bayonet at Fort Hood just last week, November 10th. Traditional military service there in the aftermath of all that. President Obama was there. But traditional service, including the rifle volley taps, the final roll call, with the living lined up and responding in turn while the silence echoed after the names of those who died, a taste for the nation of what Sergeant Workman and many others have seen and heard in the field.
Captain Williams.
Here, Sergeant Major.
Major Caraveo. Sergeant First Class Long.
Here, Sergeant Major.
Staff Sergeant DeCrow.
A today when the war came home. You can join us at 800-423-TALK. Let's go to Pam in Owensboro, Kentucky. Pam, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I share, a couple of different fronts. I am a mental health professional, but also I have my son went to Iraq in the early parts as a National Guardsman from Kentucky.
Okay.
And saw several firefights, of which he really doesn't discuss with me. And then when he comes home, everything's fine, of course, Mom, and I don't need therapy. Then it's he goes back into goes back to college, gets his commission, and now he's a second lieutenant.
Okay.
And there has been some self-medicating, but he realizes that as an officer, that's not becoming. And so it's his behavior and his attitude that makes it hard for his new marriage, his relationships with his family. It makes it difficult for all of us to know how to help him, and he insists that if he gets any help that, of course, he doesn't need, that it will affect his future in the Army. So as a result, he just deals with it. So.
And you're a mental health professional, Pam, so you can recognize this but still feel it sounds as though you feel somewhat unable to put him on a path that might be helpful for him.
Well, exactly. I've encouraged him to go into whatever the service has to offer him, but he says, Mama, you don't understand. I cannot do that. And I don't know if so much of it is his pride, he's ready to go, and he's gung-ho Army, and he wants to just let us do our job. And he doesn't feel like he needs the help.
Jeremiah Workman, Sergeant Workman, having been in this situation where people may have wanted to speak to you but didn't know how to get through to you, what's your advice, if you have it, for Pam?
Yeah, Pam, I will tell you, first of all, that is one of the biggest myths out there, is that coming forward with PTSD will affect your military career. I am living proof that, after being diagnosed with PTSD, I was selected for Staff Sergeant out of the below zone. I then got picked to be the driver and security man for the 16th Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps, where I was with the Commandant of the Marine Corps and the Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps every day. I traveled with them.
But you're a Navy Cross winner. You were not an ordinary Marine at that point.
I don't think that matters because I've got too many friends that have been diagnosed with PTSD and gotten the help, and they've still been promoted. They've still, for instance, I was able to go to the National Reconnaissance Office on an internship while still on active duty. They got me my TS-SCI clearance, which is, the highest clearance you can get, and they couldn't do it. I mean, they cannot stop you. I mean, that's why, the last caller, I wanted to tell him about that. As far as clearances, they cannot stop you from getting clearances for having PTSD. And I also want to bring up to you, Pam, relay this to your son. There was an Army general, and I can't think of his name right off the top of my head, but he came forward, I believe it was in the Washington Post, and told his story of having PTSD. This is an Army general. There's nothing to be embarrassed about. There's nothing, you just have to put your pride to the side.
Now, you're leaving the military in 3 weeks, is it, Sergeant?
I'm actually being medically retired out of the Marine Corps, and I've got about 3 or 4 weeks left.
If you had intended a career in the military, would you feel the same freedom to speak up as boldly as you have?
Yeah, I wasn't very happy when they told me I was getting the Navy Cross. I felt like others deserved it. I witnessed pretty heroic things December 23rd, 2004, and I really felt like I didn't rate the award that others deserved it. But with that award gave me a license to speak up. And when I was diagnosed with PTSD, it's almost like people will listen to me a little bit more. So I think I would be vocal regardless.
Pam, what's your hope for your son at this point?
That he finds himself, that he understands that he's not less a man because of what this war has done to him, but he's more of a man because of it.
We wish the same for him, and we thank you for your call, Pam. Thank you very much. Joe in Waltham, Massachusetts. You're on the air, Joe.
Hi, Tom. I'm calling into the show today, listening to the show, and I wanted to bring up the point of the children. And what's happening to the kids or the children of the guys that are coming back with the PTSD? And, I mean, I want to just chime in from my personal experience growing up in a household with, a decorated Vietnam vet, two tours of duty, Bronze Star with a V, the whole nine yards, and experiencing what post-traumatic stress can do to a family for over 20 years. And, you know, you might not experience war firsthand, but growing up with fits of rage and what's dad going to be like today, waking up in the middle of the night to hearing your dad having these terrible, horrendous nightmares. And, you know, that in itself is such a horrendous experience, and it's a chain that needs to be broken, that if these young men are dealt with when they come back before they get into the general population, I think, you know, things will be better for the families and the children.
Joe, your dad did tours in Vietnam. Did he know what was going on? Did he understand what he was in the grip of?
Well, you know, the last caller talked about the pride, and these guys are young, so it's, they feel like, you know, if I just made it back alive, why can't I deal with this? And that's where I think the government, especially, you know, the armed forces, should treat everyone as if there's a potential problem or a potential issue, because you can't weed out the people, because everybody's going to say, I'm fine.
Yeah.
But when they get home, it's a different story, and they, you know, they want to deal with it. They want to be, you know, men about it. And I just think these issues and these experiences are so traumatic that they can't deal with it alone. And, you know, after 25 years, my dad finally put his pride aside and went to the VA and got help, and he went away, and he was, you know, taken care of, and he came back. When I tell you he came back a different person, I wish I would have been able to grow up with the person he came back as after the care.
Wow.
And I just feel bad for these young guys who are coming back to new families. And if you're not going to do it for yourself, do it for your kids. Do it for your young ones who they don't need to be brought up in this Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, you know, atmosphere. And that's exactly what it was. And that's how, I mean, that's, if I could explain it in a short, you know, way, you never knew what dad was going to be like today. And it all stems back from his 1968-1969 tours of duty, I just had to say something about it because...
No, I'm glad, Joe. I mean, you make it heartbreakingly vivid, but and we thank you for putting that testimony right out there. But let me take it to Jeremiah Workman. I mean, when it comes to home life afterward, Sergeant Workman, and how that affected your wife, ultimately your son, Devin. I mean, things got tough. There was a moment where you lit out after your neighbor's dog and choked it into unconsciousness. I mean, you were wound too.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with PTSD that, you know, people need to realize is PTSD is just not, it just doesn't affect the service member that come home from Iraq or Afghanistan or, you know, any other conflict that we've ever been in, but it affects everybody around you, and they are the ones that, you know, really get the brunt of it. You know, for me, I've got a great wife. She's stuck by my side. But I can tell you, for me, you know, when my son was born, that is really, really when I came over the hump, so to speak, and it just made me realize that, you know, I need to continue with the, you know, with the counseling. And, you know, I'm not embarrassed to say that I still take medication for it to help me sleep and, you know, things of that nature. So, unfortunately, like the caller said, you know, that this happens all the time, where guys just can't put that pride aside and go get the help. And they don't realize that it's affecting their family the way it is.
Joe, thank you for your call, and we're glad your father finally got there for that help. Jeremiah Workman, here's a question from Facebook. Sean asks, he says, is Sergeant Workman able to play the realistic video games of today, watch movies, etc.? Are the triggers you have to watch out for bringing back the combat trauma?
Well, I can tell you that I don't play these new video games that are coming out. They really are, you know, some of these new ones that are coming out, a lot of them are World War II first-person shooters, and I honestly can't sit there in a dark room and play these games. I mean, it affects me that much. And as far as the movies, my wife, if I even attempt to put in a war movie, she'll leave the room, because it does affect me, and I know a lot of people that are in the same boat. It really does affect me, and it is one of the quickest triggers for me is movies.
Let's go to Dan in Charlottesville, North Carolina. Dan, you're on the air.
Yeah, hello, and Semper Fi Marine, and happy belated birthday to you. I'm a first lieutenant in the Army National Guard. I deployed in 2006, was there all of 07, coming back in December. My experience wasn't so much the battles outside the wire, but the battle within, that is, within the company. And I liken it to the movie Platoon, where we had such deep divisions, where on one side you had the company commander who was giving all authority and responsibilities to the NCOs, and myself and colleagues, we were literally allowed to do absolutely nothing, not even train our troops, not put any input on mission planning, and it got very demoralizing for us.
Did it leave you with trauma, Dan? Trauma as a result of that?
Yes, I'm still dealing with a lot of issues as far, you know, 2.5 years later, as far as, you know, why am I an officer? You know, what worth do I have? And I'm, you know, gone to the VA for some counseling, military one source. I'm on medication, and I'm doing, you know, fine, a lot better than what I was a couple years ago. But as an officer, we have even fewer resources, I think, than what the enlisted do, because we can't exactly go and talk about it or complain or whatever to an enlisted folks. There's just, you know, so few officers, and it got very, very lonely, and our commander at one point was at the point of being relieved of command because of what was going on.
Well, Dan, I cannot describe the tide of calls you've had today on this front, and I appreciate your story. We just get a glimpse there. One more, Bob, Westwood, Massachusetts. Bob, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Our time is short, Bob. Take us right to it if you'd be good enough.
Okay. I am a Vietnam veteran. I'm 63 years old, and when I was there, as the sergeant can tell you, Marines traditionally do not leave their dead. After a firefight, we would go out and bring in the bodies. And I came home. I had no idea I had PTSD. It wasn't even PTSD was even mentioned. And this is back in the 60s. I get very self-destructive, and I got into a group that pretty much saved my life.
What do you think of Sergeant Workman bringing his story forward today, Bob?
Well, he's a brother, so if I can do anything to help him, I would. I think it's great. I think it's wonderful that this is being addressed now as opposed to when I was in.
The veteran from one war speaking to veteran from another there. And I'm sorry, but our time is short, and we've just had so many people on this front. Jeremiah Workman, you call PTSD the 8,000-mile sniper shot. What do you mean?
Yeah, you go over to Iraq or Afghanistan, you fight your butt off for this country, and you know, for guys or gals to come home and to kill themselves, You know, that's exactly what, that's what I call it. You know, these suicides, it's an 8,000-mile sniper shot from the enemy, and it's another victory for the terrorist. And we, you know, we need to address this. We need to take care of them and start lowering these numbers.
You've worked with that, and we appreciate that work as well. It's really been some conversation today. Dr. Heidi Kraft in San Diego, author of Rule Number 2, thank you for jumping in with us today, Dr. Kraft, and thank you for your wisdom on this front. It's great to have you.
My pleasure.
And Sergeant Jeremiah Workman, Navy Cross winner for Valor, author of the new book, Shadow of the Sword, A Marine's Journey of War, Heroism, and Redemption. Sergeant, we wish you and your wife and son and whole family just the best, and we're grateful to you for bringing this to the fore for yourself and for many others. Thank you for your service and for this. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Listeners, thanks for being with us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.